This episode of Rock Under Fire is brought to you by
the goddamn Finkelstein shit kid
and listeners like you.
Episode 17. Hey out there, it's Rock Under Fire. We're back. I'm Stick Nixon. I'm with these two cool dudes.
What's happening?
What's going on, Mike?
17. Is that like Tiger Beat? Wasn't that like Tiger Beat?
That's crazy.
Only picture when I see Tiger Beat is John Candy from Stripes on the cover. Remember the movie Stripes?
Tiger
John
Beat?
John Candy was on like Tiger Beat or something. He made it to the cover of a teen magazine at the end of it.
I guess so. I pictured David Cassidy. I never subscribed to Tiger Beat.
Well, he wasn't actually on the cover, but they mocked it in the movie Stripes at the end. Like everybody was the big heroic finish, and John Candy was on there. What a great movie.
Yeah.
Kids, watch Stripes. That's all I got. Man.
We are a rock and roll podcast.
Talk to the people.
Put rock under fire. It's been a long time since rock was under fire because remember in the 80s when rock got blamed for everything wrong in the universe?
Yeah, we have rock and roll hasn't been blamed for anything.
It's been dangerous in a long time.
It just totally disappeared from the mainstream.
Where the hell are all the Satanists anymore and the backwards messaging and records and
I kind of
PMRC?
Miss when they were blaming Ozzy for
everything
wrong.
Me too. Me too. I missed when they thought rock and roll had a satanic connection. Laughable as it was.
Yeah.
I don't know why I long for those days.
But we put it under fire for other things.
Do we put it under fire enough?
Yeah.
No, we don't. We got to go on the attack, boys. Let's tear some people up.
We want to welcome any new listeners. Like our Facebook page if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also find us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.
And snail mail. Don't forget snail mail.
Snail mail. What is snail mail, by the way? Somebody sent me a while ago, sent me a message. Can you send me your snail mail?
Letters and postcards.
It's another thing I miss. Snail mail.
But what is it? Am I the only one that doesn't know what
snail mail
is? It's the mail, man. Coming to deliver mail to your door. Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
That's it. No, it's regular mail.
Plain speech for the old-fashioned mail, the stamp on the envelope.
So, in other words, your address, your home address?
Yeah.
Like sending someone a letter.
Writing like out a letter.
Do.
Yeah. The pen pal.
Okay, so it takes
Todd,
a long
Wisconsin.
Time, like the mailman
comes
to your door
that's
and delivering
what the,
something.
That's what the knock on it is, yeah.
I remember one time in like 1976 or 77, I was 7 years old, and I remember the mailman being at the big mailbox on the street where he goes and he gets the mail out and brings it to your
All
house.
All those treasures.
I remember writing Kiss a letter.
Yeah.
Asking Kiss to send me a copy of Dressed to Kill. Because I didn't have it. And I just took the letter. I wrote it with crayons. I folded it up. And I walked it over to the mailman and asked him if he could give it to Kiss. There was no stamp. There was no envelope. There was no nothing.
Yeah,
how
could you know?
Hey, seven-year-old, man.
Get out of here, kid. I'm Gene Simmons. He didn't send me enough money.
Ed the Mailman.
Ed the Mailman. That's a moniker if I ever heard one. Damn.
A little bit of a... I have to make a correction. I have to make a correction. Regarding our Bowie episode.
Uh-oh.
Somebody pointed out that Bowie, in fact, dried out in Switzerland, not Berlin. And just have to point that out.
Then.
Yeah.
Can we cite that person? Or
We didn't agree that it was Berlin. If you listen, we were questioning it.
I said Berlin, I think. But I was actually trying to move the conversation along to the Berlin period and the Brian Eno albums. But it was kind of like, it could have been this, it could have been that. We didn't mention Scary Monsters. I mean, look, it was a Bowie conversation. We have Bowie conversation. We've had dozens and dozens of Bowie conversations. That was one of them. It just happened to be recorded. That just happened to be the Bowie conversation we had that night.
Yeah, whoever caught that was awesome. That's good.
Yeah.
Shows that they're paying attention and listening. You know?
Pay attention.
It'll be a quiz. I got it. What's going on?
Okay.
I think I got it. What's going on? I don't know what's going on.
Let's
do this. I have to say this. The Grammys. This is a couple of weeks past the Grammys. I'm not a big fan of the Grammys. It's a shit show.
Right.
However. Metallica and Lady Gaga shit the fucking bed. Now, I've been out there saying that that I kind of did like the new Metallica record. It's okay. It's not great. It's, you know, but they're evolving. They're doing what a band is going to do. But why go up on a fucking national audience with Lady Gaga? I could
see it kicking ass, but it didn't.
I'm not getting these collaborations. I'm not. Fucking, it's like Aerosmith at the Super Bowl with fucking Britney Spears. It's driving me batshit crazy. Metallica should be in a garage someplace playing fucking shit that you want to punch your neighbor in the face to.
Here's another one too, man. Metallica did it too, where they played with an orchestra. I think that whole thing that went on with bands playing with orchestras was lame. It sucked.
It's fucking stupid. You're not. That's not you.
Combination that should not happen.
Go get a fucking cello. If that's what you want to do, go get a cello. So I guess it's a what's going on, but it also grinds my fucking... I don't get it. What is this fascination with like merging metal, not even rock and roll, metal with pop music?
I did not see it, but it would have been cool if Gaga sang like a fucking metal song, like in a metal style, and like went that way, but she didn't. What was she doing?
She
like one of her songs
song.
On top? Oh, she did.
She sang their new song.
Oh, she sang a Metallica song.
Yeah, but Hetfield's mic cut out and shit, so I mean, there were like technical difficulties and stuff. I mean, and Metallica should learn, because the time that they were nominated for a Grammy Award, they lost the fucking Jethro Tull of all fucking groups.
The Grammys will never get it right.
No, they
when
just
it comes
won't.
To hard
the,
rock.
All of those awards shows, all of them, they're just fucking, let's get dressed up and show people what we can, you know, how we look and how fucking adorable we are.
Yeah, I'm over it too, man. Yeah, just freaking celebrity stroking.
You're kind of walking right into one of my things regarding the criticism of this show, and let me move that aside for a second. But Metallica,
how fucking
number one,
far?
I mean, this is what has become of, and I include metal and hard rock and just anything rock related, I include under that umbrella. Okay, this is what's become of rock and roll in the mainstream world.
Yeah,
I get that some of the criticism of this show is that we're too mainstream and that there is rock out there, and it doesn't necessarily have. My argument is that rock and roll one time was the entire universe revolved around it, and we've been through this a million times. We don't have to go over how it
No one can deny that. These guys that say, oh, they're still great bands, can't deny that it's not the center anymore.
Right.
And it's lost its primacy.
And there is still good music, but
the
golden days are over, bitch.
Right. Hip hop and R&B and country and bubblegum pop dominates the mainstream now. That's all well and good, okay? But when it comes down to Metallica, a legendary, iconic band, okay? After 30 plus years.
Easily.
Okay? Going on national television on an award on the Grammys, they don't get an introduction. Okay, now this was their spot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this was their spot. Okay, and Lars was having dinner with Lady Gaga a couple weeks before the Grammys, from what I understand. And he said, let's do something together.
Yeah,
okay?
I bet he did.
This was their spot.
I bet he did.
They don't get an introduction.
You got him some goo goo.
James' microphone cuts out. They're doing their song, and then it suddenly becomes the next day, oh, who were those old guys that were backing up Lady Gaga?
Yeah.
That's how much respect rock and roll gets on the mainstream platform.
I'm going to take you one step further. Fucking Paul McCartney collaborated with my arch nemesis, Kanye West.
I know where you're going
with
this. Yeah.
It was fucking hideous. And Twitter explodes with these statements, and I quote, yo, I don't know who this Paul McCartney cat is, but he's about to blow up.
He's about to blow up.
That's hysterical,
like,
if people
what?
Are saying it. You know what? Any person that says that, though, on a public forum is getting attacked.
What
on
fucking
all sides,
planet
man.
Are you from that you don't...
Yeah, everyone's like, you fucking asshole.
And that's my statement. What is this fascination with pop music and metal, or pop music and rock and roll? Why isn't there... Zach Bryan... You said it yourself, the
because
country.
I think that there are bands, and again, Aerosmith was one of them. The horror bands, the ones that have to use every opportunity to try and go after that mainstream exposure. Okay, let's try to appeal to the kids or the younger generation, 30 years younger than us. Go on the award show. Go where Beyonce is. Go where Gaga is. Go where Rihanna is. Go where everybody is, as much as you can. And I think Metallica, in the sense that, well, we're Metallica, we could do whatever we want. We're still going to sell out football stadiums all over the world. We still have our fan base. We're going to get elbowed and ribbed a little bit, but you know what?
And it makes sense to appeal to the young, too. Yeah,
that fan base might be shrinking, though.
In this case, it backfired.
They're going to have their dedicated fans. I think it backfired also with Lou Reed. They're starting to... I think there's a chink in the armor. I do. You know, and going back to the point when you were saying, like, you know, country music and stuff, Zach Brown is another one. He's covering Metallica songs live. He's covering Soundgarden songs live. So he's trying to get to those masses. But it's just, you know, what is... Don't cross over, right? You're a country artist, you're a country artist. You know, I don't know. I'm not fucking digging.
It's like a lot of rock artists. Everybody crossed over into country in 2016. That was a big trend.
Every fucking buddy's listening to country.
Steven Tyler did. He became a country singer.
Yeah. Steven Tyler doesn't know what the fuck he is anymore, that guy. He's just, I don't know. But I think he should go back to doing drugs is what I think he should do.
Yeah, yeah. Some people need to go back on drugs. Yeah. I totally agree.
Unfortunately, it took Scott Weiland's life, but the guy was he was a rock star, man. That dude was a fucking rock star.
Sure.
he lived on the fucking
edge.
No one
was surprised about that.
He had the fucking fashion thing down. He was fucking, he knew his roots. He was a fucking rock star in every sense
of
the word.
Good tunes, man.
That's it.
Good
melodies. Where, you know, it kind of informed fashion. It was a time where 13, 14-year-old kids, when we were in middle school, we were trying to emulate our rock icons. We grew our hair long.
Painted our jackets.
Yeah. Tight blue jeans, bandanas, you know, the whole thing. We looked rock and roll, man. Now kids, and there's no distinction to race. It's black and white that are wearing their pants down to their knees with their asses hanging out of their pants. This is hip-hop fashion, man. This is the culture that, this is what has influenced pop culture. Case in point, rock and roll is invisible from mainstream culture. We're too mainstream. We focus on too many mainstream bands. There's a lot of rock and roll out there. You got to look for it. I can name 20 great bands off the top of my head.
No one's arguing that there aren't great bands, but
right,
golden age is over,
and there's no
giants like there. You know, I don't have to say their names.
And the only argument I hear from anybody is, well, there's plenty of good bands out there. I know there are, man. I know there are, but where are the great ones? Where's the music? Where's the masterpiece?
Where's the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd, for instance?
Where's the masterpiece albums of the past 15 to 20 years, man? I don't care if you can name 20 new bands that came out.
What's the Modern White album?
Not quantity. Where's the masterpieces? Stop fucking telling me about the Black Keys. How many different ways can you strum an A chord on top of a snare drum?
Dropping bombs.
Everybody loves them these days. That's
I mean, that went out
group.
Of style on the White Stripes second fucking album. Oh, we're going to play without a bass player. That's revolutionary. I wonder where that came from.
Don't let Jay hear you say that. He loves the Black Keys. I could take him or leave him.
You know, yeah, they rock. They rock. They rock. But who cares? What's the lead singer's name? Can anybody name their lead singer?
Mm-hmm.
Can anybody name their bass player? Well, not their bass player. They don't have a bass player.
There's no charismatic stars. Except Lady Gaga.
It's color by numbers, man. It's like we're all of the original artists, man. All the artists that matter painted a picture. Ooh. They painted pictures. They painted masterpieces. You know what they're doing now? They're buying these
paint
little connect
numbers,
the dots,
bitch.
Man, and they're filling it in.
Ooh, Mike's eating red meat tonight, Pat.
Yeah, he's out there for blood.
But you know what? We're in a period of stagnation.
People.
Now, here's the thing. It's like
stagnation
we're not saying that rock doesn't exist. I'm not saying that rock doesn't exist at all. I'm saying it's dead.
Rock is dead. Roger Daltrey was right.
It's dead. It's like Weekend at Bernie's. Rock is here on the fucking couch, but it's dead.
It's not even beep.
And people are in denial. Beep. Well, it's on life support. Beep. It's just going through a period of, you know, well, it's going through a period. No, it's been erased. As irrelevant as the Grammys have become, this is what it is. The Grammys have become the VMAs.
And the guitar is not the primal instrument in music.
Well,
anymore.
Did you hear Bon Iver?
Bon Iver. Yeah.
Sensitive bearded males is not going to push rock and roll forward. It's just not.
No.
And he tried that in the 70s. It was called Boston.
Bearded males with suspenders strumming like small little ukuleles or whatever it is they play. No.
We need a good drug addict to come along and just clean things
That's
up.
That's part of the problem, Pat. No one parties anymore. I don't think any of these guys party. I think they juice. They drink fresh squeezed orange juice instead of doing heroin.
Yeah,
they're not rock stars. Come on,
I shouldn't even go as far as saying heroin, but you know, Eric Clapton put out some of the best.
I'm hyperbolizing, of course.
With a pile of cocaine in front of him, for Christ's sakes, you know what I mean? It's you know, it is what it is.
It's funny you should say that about Eric Clapton.
Funny I should say that.
Yeah, no, you foreshadowed something possibly, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll go there now.
I love Clapton. He's a good autobiography, man. Very interesting life. Let me see if I can dig that up. It might be put away with some older books, but I'll see if I can dig that up for
you. I'll take that, bitch.
He's a very interesting man.
What else? What else you got? All right, Ciroc is dead.
On the what's going on front?
Yeah, I got some stuff on what's going on. I congratulate myself for a second because at no point in the dawn of the CD. When was the dawn of the CD, man? When did CDs like really explode, man?
Well,
was
early
it 91?
Oh, when they exploded?
Remember when the CD? They existed in the mid-80s.
But they, I'd say late 80s.
Remember when they went boom?
Late 80s, early 90s. Like,
yeah. There were a lot of CDs that still weren't, that like, a lot of albums that weren't on CDs until
took a little while.
The mid-90s.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Well, unlike a lot of my friends, man, I never like rushed out to replace all my vinyl and get everything on CD now.
Right.
You know, like, didn't buy it ad hype, you know, despite the fact that everyone always said, oh, it sounds so much better. Like,
I
never
disagree.
Bought ad hype either, man. I never like thought they necessarily sounded better than vinyl.
I agree with you there, Stick. You know? 100%
absolutely.
I agree.
So I stuck with it and reaped the benefits of, like, for a little while, not more than a little while, 10 to 15 years, people looked at vinyl like almost like it was valueless, you know.
Yeah.
They put it out there, and I cleaned up, you know. I got a ton of awesome shit, mostly at our local place, Vintage Vinyl. That's where we're at. Giving up our location a little bit.
I'm sure they're
somewhere
starting
in Jersey.
They're starting to jack their prices, I'm sure, now, too.
That's
right?
Exactly what it is, man. If you go there now, man, you're not going to find Kiss and the Rolling Stones in the bin anymore for $3.99 or on the wall for $20. You know, me and Mike have been talking about this, you know.
And new vinyl's $35.
And whatever's left in the bin is like Pure Prairie League and Joan Armour Trading, Paco or something. There's no major artists, you know, in there at all.
Paco.
Same records, man. But
you got the new Public Image Limited album.
So it's hopeless, man. But I saw it from across the room. I made a good score. I made a beeline for it. Hold on, I'll get it.
I picked a wrong time to rediscover vinyl. Now, this is my midlife crisis. Some people buy like a Lamborghini. Some people, I know one girl who started smoking cigarettes again after 20 years.
Hey, Mark, don't cut my flow, man.
Yeah. Whoa. So I've rediscovered vinyl. Now, Stickman, it's got something that... it's pretty awesome.
I always wanted the heavy metal soundtrack. The fellas are looking at it right now. The heavy metal movie from 1981. I got it on vinyl. Always wanted it. I saw it from across the room. Like, zunk, thank you. $3.99. You know.
Got that at Vintage?
At Vintage, yeah.
No
Sitting right in the front. Now, when we did our episode on soundtracks, man, did we mention that?
No, we did not.
The funny thing is that I had that in my hand about an hour before you bought it because we talked later that night.
Yeah. Mike was. I told him I got it. Mike was cracking up.
American Gigolo soundtrack.
We absolutely
did
not bring
this soundtrack, man.
We were remiss in not bringing this friggin' record up by talking about the all-time great soundtracks. Because let me tell you, I put it on and was love at first bite. Like, yeah, it's
I just think
awesome.
It's funny that Journey is listed on.
Let me tell you something. Okay, yeah, it rocks the hell out, and then there's Journey, Open Arms, but it works. Dude, I'm telling you, man, I leave it on, man. Like in that mix, it just works somehow. It's like emotionally evocative. Like
somebody knew what they were doing.
And you know what? It's other than the Dio tune, which is fucking awesome, a great version of Mob Rules. It's not heavy metal. It's just cool rock. Two songs from one of my favorite bands, Cheap Trick, wrote songs just for it.
Trippy ass,
bro. There's a
Fagan.
There's a Fagan tune on there. I never heard anything else. And the Stevie Nicks tune is magic, man. It's called The Blue Lamp. Yeah. Fucking great. It was supposed to be on Belladonna, I read. But
that's a nice score, dude.
But yeah, very nice. I love the heavy metal soundtrack.
That was a good. What's going on right there, man?
But now I'm back to buying CDs because they're cheap. They're cheap now.
I've been downloading media again. Whatever. It is what it is.
What are you guys talking about media?
We got a topic tonight too, huh?
And by the way, Discogs is my new favorite website. Okay.
We got a topic. This one is brought to my attention by a loyal listener. He listened to, I guess at the point where he moved to Texas, my cousin Aaron.
This story.
Yeah, Aaron's great. You drank with us, right? At the Liberty? Aaron's just great. It was karaoke night. He was singing all kinds of crazy stuff. Johnny Cash. And the guy is just lights out. You want to party with somebody and have a good night drinking, you party with Aaron. So he moved to his family moved to Texas first, and he was in the service, so he had to wait before he could move down there. And he was telling me that he downloaded, I guess at that point we had like 9 or 10 episodes out, and he told me that he loaded up on his iPod or his phone or whatever all 9 of them. And I've told this story before, and headed out on the highway, man, and he listened to us like consecutive. And the whole time I'm getting message after message after message from him, and he's like saying this and explaining that and asking this, and it was just mind blowing because it made me revisit our old episodes, which was very interesting to do. Because the sound quality wasn't as great, and just, you know, we were still trying to get our feet, which we still kind of are.
Well, the quality was hurting on the first one, but after that, it's been consistent, right?
I believe so. I absolutely think so. Yeah. So, you know, it was just great to revisit that, and he's just been a huge supporter. And he goes, "Hey, are you guys open to topics?" Absolutely, we're open
to topics. We need topics, man. Shit, we want them.
You know, that's what's going to keep listeners engaged, if they, you know, if we're talking about something they want to hear. So, you know, he throws one out at me, and I brought it to Mike's attention. I said, "What do you think of this one?" And tonight you got it, Aaron, down in Texas, down in Dallas, which I will be going down there in April to visit. So this one is going to be all about supergroups. Do you love them?
Super.
Do you hate them? Who's your favorite? What kind of supergroup? He specifically asked each of us what kind of supergroup we would put together.
I think it's awesome that the only two people that I know for a fact listen to our show are named Aaron.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Batting 1,000 with the Aarons of the world.
We're big in the A's of the phone book.
Yeah. So I get the message last week. You want to talk about supergroups? Without like looking at Wikipedia, only two came to my mind. You know, one is maybe the best one ever, but I only got two that instantly come to mind. You mentioned one before that I didn't even think about. Damn Yankees.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. I forgot about them.
That happened to be one of Aaron's favorites.
That was somebody's worst.
That was on Facebook. Somebody's worst. Yeah. I'm not gonna kill it because it was different. Mm-hmm. It was definitely different, and it was a completely different side of Ted Nugent. I did see them live. They opened for Bad Company, I believe it was. I don't know. It was a flash in the pan thing, I think, and you know, Nuge got kind of sick of it quick.
Yeah, I can't get down with the Nuge.
When I think of the first thing that comes to mind for me, my entire life, anytime I hear supergroup is Cream. Like yeah, that's just like Cream.
That was the first one.
It's almost like they're in the dictionary for supergroup.
And then the second one followed right after Cream was The Firm. I always remember because I was a teenager, and I always remember, you know, Paul Rogers and Jimmy Page, and it was this big deal.
It's Radio Rock.
Yeah, but the classic rock radio stations were like, whoa, this is Jimmy Page and Paul Rogers, and, you know, they promoted the shit out of it.
I have to confess I wasn't into it at the time.
I loved it at the time, and I bought the album the day it came out.
I had it,
and
too.
Vintage Vinyl, man. I ran to Vintage Vinyl because I knew it was coming out.
So, obviously, Cream was the first. I mean, that's the first one I think. But then you start thinking about, like, the Yardbirds.
And I've never been a big fan of Paul Rogers either. But for some reason, you know, you're 15 years old. You're getting into all that stuff. You know, Bad Company was on my rotation. Zeppelin was always on my turntable.
Trying everything.
So it was kind of like, it had only been 5 years since Zeppelin broke up.
Yeah, and Page, you didn't know what Page, you know, was Page going to do anything ever again?
Because, there was some mystique. Robert Plant had already had two or three solo albums out, and Plant was, like, doing nothing.
Right.
And those albums are great in retrospect, but I remember even back then, a lot of people hating on him. Like, oh, even back then, like, he's old. Oh, it's not. Everybody wanted it to be Zeppelin.
It's scary. We're now 10 years older than those guys were back then.
I didn't like Plant solo stuff. I got into it later. You know, like Big Log and stuff like that. I mean,
exactly. I back then, odd. You weren't embracing it.
Yeah, it was not.
But back then, I wasn't even added to Zeppelin yet, honestly. If you're talking about like 82, 83, not quite.
There was still an angst about me at that point. You know, I was seeking the Iron Maidens of the world.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Black Sabbath and stuff.
Big Log is the exception for me because, you know, I wasn't crazy about Plant's solo stuff either, but Big Log I loved. I love the video. Like, if we ever do a show on our favorite music, like MTV music videos, the video for Big Log, like, the only thing better than Big Log is the Stones' Undercover of the Night.
I'm super prepared for that episode, man. Let me tell you.
But that's another, I guess we'll do that one time.
Mine has to be, all the 80s ZZ Top videos are all my favorite videos.
Great, man. I did last night what I often do, man. Sometimes I'll just like go on videos from old MTV and start rocking the F out, like crank it like on YouTube one after another.
Awesome. Love. And you know what's great about that is once you're playing one, there's always something in the queue and there's like six or seven that might be related to it. You're like, fuck yeah.
I came to a conclusion. It's uncanny how many of the best ones for my way, the ones that excite me the most are from 1982. I'm thinking 82 is my favorite year of music. I am, dude. Like there's so many in terms of pop rock, so many golden cuts, man.
Great year.
I'm telling you.
Some of those great promotional Van Halen videos from that era are great. They weren't even like true videos. They were just like a promote. It was like a promotional thing that I guess the record companies did or whatever. It wasn't like a true video. I mean, and then obviously 84, they blew up with the 84 album doing really cool. You know, they steamrolled their way right into the video world.
Yeah, they did.
It's funny you mentioned like 82 because a lot of like, those early years of the 80s, 80, 81, especially 81 and 82 for me, those years are made great, not by big acts, man. It's like the smaller, like almost one-hit wonders,
yeah.
two-hit wonders,
like, yes.
you know,
yeah.
Missing Persons,
yeah.
Motels,
bing,
Quarter
bing,
Flash.
Bing, bing. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about, bro.
Tommy Two Tone, Greg Kinn.
Keep going, bro. You get
band.
Yeah, the breakup
Love boy.
Song.
Joan Jett.
So, you know, I getting back on topic, I thought supergroups was a great thing, and we've already discussed a couple of them.
You know what, though? All right, and I don't think about Cream as a supergroup. I think about Blind Faith as a supergroup.
Yeah,
they're ones, because they're the ones that combine Cream and maybe Traffic or Steve
Traffic,
Winwood,
yeah.
man. That's Steve Winwood.
You know, and
they were known as the supergroup.
Oh, absolutely.
Ginger Baker on drums.
It was crazy because neither one of them wanted to sing, and Clapton talks about it in the autobiography.
Winwood didn't want to sing.
No, he did not. They both just wanted to be like session guys. They were always, because they were just so used, and Winwood especially, he was in the spotlight since he was like 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
They just wanted to kind of scale back, and Clapton just didn't budge, and eventually Winwood ended up singing on it. But, I mean, that record, it's a one-off, and it's just fucking tremendous.
Can't Find My Way Home.
Baker kind of forced his way into.
The album cover's fucking phenomenal, the original album cover. Everything about it is just fucking great.
Didn't he tell Clapton, he's like, I'm going to be the drummer in this. I'm going to kick the shit out of you if you don't, you know. He basically just announced to Clapton that he was going to be the drummer.
He didn't talk about that in the autobiography.
Watch
he
the
talked
movie,
about it between him and Winwood.
I heard that he promised Jack Bruce he wouldn't play with Ginger without him, you know, like, and it worked out that way, man.
Something like that.
This new band is not Cream, and then
what's
there's Ginger drumming.
What's the Ginger Baker documentary?
Oh, Beware of Mr. Ginger.
Beware
of Mr. Ginger. Beware of Mr.
Baker.
That's great, man. We got to watch that again.
Yeah,
hey, it's still full of piss and vinegar, man.
That was a great, that's a great super group.
The most interesting thing about that group, though, is indeed the album cover, man, which was banned, right? Because it had a pubescent
girl
with the airplane in her hand.
Yep.
And there were some hot rumors going around about that. They were saying she was a groupie and they had her as a sex slave, you know, people were saying.
Let me just say that, you know, once I do Lendu the biography, he was not a squeaky clean individual. He was fucked up.
That's
man.
What I wanted to say, man.
Clapton. And that's drugs. I mean, drugs are going to fucking knock you around a little bit and make you you're going to make some decisions that you're not too crazy about.
Clapton's a well-known heroin addict.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well-known.
Yeah. Drug addict. Put it to you this way. When he married Harrison's girlfriend, that at that wedding, her bridesmaid, he was waiting in the closet at the mansion that they were at. And he like yanked her in the closet. He's making out and like practically banging her in the closet at his own wedding. He was a scoundrel and a drunk and drug addict. And it's a fascinating story. It really is.
Oh, man, you got to lay it on me. So, all right, name another one. I got another one I'm thinking of.
I don't know if they're really a super group. I always dug Cracker. I mean, they came from
How are
like
they a
parts
super
of like
group?
They're not really a super group, but they were a group from like Camperman, Beethoven.
That's
and,
what it was, Camperman.
You know, they all kind of came together and they put out a really cool record. Their first record was great.
I have a friend that actually fucking loves Cracker, dude.
Teen
I have
Angst,
a friend.
That first album, Teen Angst.
It's going
just
out
like
to you,
blister.
Jay, if you ever listen to this. You fag.
I love them, man. It's a good group. I mean, it's not really a super group, but they were.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask that question. What really constitutes a super group? I mean, does it have to be the success that they've had? You know, we discussed it off air, and I'll throw it out there now. We all agreed that Black Sabbath with Dio is not a supergroup. That's a replacement of a singer.
Replacement, yeah.
You know, Van Halen with Sammy Hagar, that was a replacement of a singer. That
not a supergroup.
But I beg to differ with that one only because Sammy had a solo career, a really good solo career, and he was in Montrose.
True.
So, but
true.
They kept, and you guys countered with them keeping the Van Halen moniker, and that kind of, you know, that hit home with me.
I think, like, to me, a supergroup is basically at least two different artists from different bands or different, just two different
Gotta
artists.
Gotta be at least two different artists and two different bands. Three even sweeter.
Getting together to form
a new super group.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, if you you make a great case for Van Halen, but it's still done under the banner of Van Halen.
Sure.
He was joining their band.
Yep.
Did he change the sound? Yes, he did. He wrote a lot of the songs later on, but it's...
And your point, yeah, I want to bring it up, Chickenfoot. Yeah, right. That was your counterpoint, which was fantastic.
And that was Michael Anthony with him, right? Yeah. I mean, it was half of Van Halen.
It was Michael Anthony, Sammy Hagar, Joe Satriani, and Chad from Chili Peppers.
Oh, that sounds like a super group.
Yeah, it was. And they're pretty good, too.
I didn't realize that was the Chickenfoot. I knew it was Michael Anthony. I didn't know Satriani was involved in that shit. Yeah.
A few of our listeners left some comments, so we'll go to Brian. Brian said the new Pornographers... he said the Foo Fighters can be thought of as a super group.
They definitely could.
The Foo Fighters, how?
Mad Season.
What band was Pat in the guitar?
Who else is in the Foo Fighters? Let's shoot this down right now. Let's put this under fire.
You look it up.
I smell bullshit.
Was in another group.
Tap Smear? My old lady just got one of those.
Temple of the Dog. I loved his response. Temple of the Dog was one of my favorite ones. And Mad Season was from the same time.
The Breeders.
Yeah.
Highwaymen.
Breeders aren't a super group.
Anybody remember the Highwaymen? That was like Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and somebody else. That was kind of like a country Traveling Wilburys.
You know what? You took it out of my mouth. I didn't even think of the Traveling Wilburys. How can I not think of the Wilburys? They're the ultimate super group. They're the ultimate one. They went under my radar.
You take Roy Orbison.
How did I do that?
Roy Orbison, man. You pair him with...
Fucking A.
Jeff Lynne.
Oh, my God.
Tom Petty. And then you compare, you take those three and you take one of the members of the greatest rock group that ever existed, the Beatles, and top it off with the greatest songwriter of the 20th century.
Remember how much we loved that album that came out, Handle the Care? We love that shit.
Yeah, that was a good record, man. Traveling Wilburys was...
Blind Faith, he said, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Everything Les Claypool has thrown together.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That guy's done a lot of work.
That's Cleveland's man.
Pat Smear, I got this off Wikipedia. Pat Smear was in The Germs, The Death Folk, Nirvana, Hole, Foo Fighters, The Birds of Satan, 45 Grave, The Adolescents, Belinda Carlisle. I mean, the guys.
Foo Fighters qualifies, I think.
Okay.
Mark said Oysterhead.
Because it's more of like Dave Borderline. Grohl's. I think it's more Dave Grohl's gig. I really do. It is borderline. We'll leave it at that.
We'll put him in, but
I like
grudgingly.
A lot on this list, though. Temple of the Dog in particular, and again, Mad Season was the singer from Alice in Chains.
Temple of the Dog. You know, yeah, I guess so. Wasn't it done before Pearl Jam broke and Soundgarden wasn't really all that big?
I don't know if it was done then. It could have been recorded then. I don't know if it was done then. See, the Temple of the Dog came from Mother Love Bug.
At the same time as 10 was huge. So.
Yes, because they marketed it that way.
Summer of 92.
The makings of Sound...
That was a good time.
The makings of Pearl Jam basically came from Mother Love Bone. And their singer, Andrew Wood, died. He was roommates with Chris Cornell. They were right on the verge of like breaking... And, you know, if you get a chance out there, listen to the Mother Love Bone stuff. There's a record out that's really good. It's of that era, of that Seattle thing. It's not quite grunge. It's good. It's a cusp record, if I may. It's good. You know,
I've never listened to it, man. No, you know, you're like the 100th person that's told me, and I've never heard it, I don't think.
I like it. Anyway, he dies. They're like, shit, what are we going to do? They find Eddie. They form Pearl Jam. Soundgarden is still doing their thing. But because Chris was so close to him, I guess they got together and did like a tribute to Andrew Wood, basically, which is really all that Temple of the Dog record is. And you know, I like it a lot. There's some really good stuff. It's very moody, and you know, everything from that era is.
Yeah.
But there's some like pushing forward back. I think it's called. It's just fucking the riff in it is killer. And you know, it's funny.
It was
Chris
a good
Cornell.
Time.
Chris Cornell is actually in another one, Audio Slave, and I wanted so much to love that because you're looking at Rage Against the Machine and Chris Cornell.
I didn't like Audio Slave either, dude. Somebody bought it for me. I didn't like it.
It wasn't what you thought it was going to be, right? It
sounded like they're ripping themselves off. I can't speak tonight.
Chris kind of... I wanted it to be Soundgarden on fucking speed, and it wasn't. Chris Cornell kind of like... I don't know. Maybe he fell in love or something. Mm. But
I thought so, too. I thought Chris Cornell lost his edge early. I'm sorry, man.
He did. A lot of people absolutely did. I agree. Yeah. You and I are 100% in agreement on that. And I love the dude. Right. I think he's great. But I think I wanted that record to be better than it was.
Sure.
It just didn't turn out.
Yeah, I got you, bro. Yeah.
Mark said Oysterhead. I just wanted to get Mark's comment in, which is basically Trey from Fish.
Right.
And Les Claypool and Stuart Copeland. Robbie said The Gun Club.
Gun Club is one of the underrated bands of all time. But how are they
Gun
the super? Yeah, they made my underrated list.
In your underrated
I don't know how they're
now,
a super group.
I know
group,
nothing
though.
About Gun Club. Now you know more about this.
I don't know that they're a super group. Robbie knows more than I do.
Right.
I don't know anything about that.
Rob, if you're out there listening, please inform us of this.
Call the show live.
Oh, that, never mind. That was the bat phone.
Yeah, or send up a bat signal. Just put the words in the sky.
Commissioner.
And when Brian's answer to the what group would you have loved to see or just put something together?
Oh, now we're going. This is a different topic.
No, well, he just no, but he didn't put one together. But he commented that the Nirvana REM crossover would have been epic. That it never happened.
Yeah,
it was supposed to happen.
Yeah,
and it you know,
yeah, it
that would have been epic.
Yeah,
nobody mentioned Dave Grohl and John Paul Jones. What was that? Something Vultures. They actually played on Saturday Night Live.
Them Crooked Vultures.
Them Crooked Vultures. Yep. That was pretty wicked.
I have that disc. I love that disc.
That was pretty wicked stuff. I would have liked to have seen that.
John Paul Jones' stamp is on that too.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can hear like, oh, that's still Zeppelin.
How about the Hindu Love Gods? That Warren Zevon and REM.
Yeah. It's
basically REM without Michael Stipe. Wow. Warren Zevon.
That's it. That's one. That's one. Getting back to Oysterhead, man, I'd like to see them. I wouldn't mind seeing Trey.
Yeah, Trey would be
freaking Colonel and Stuart Copeland together, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Fucking, I saw fucking Privis do that Charlie the Chocolate Factory. Dude, the Les Claypool is just out there.
This is one concert I kind of brag about, man. I went to Lollapalooza in 93,
nice.
Man, where they headlined, man. In the hot, hot sun, dude. And there was no shower. It was like a Buffalo Stampede, the mosh. It was just dry dirt covering everything, man. Like, no moisture. Nuts.
I saw it at State Theater.
I didn't even get that close to it, dude.
That's
like,
craziness,
there's
right?
There's energy in air, man. Like,
people were, it was, and you know what? It was like 2 days after Halloween, so people were like dressed up, and it was just... It was all out, just incredible.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Quite, yeah,
it's funny that
if
you
he
mentioned
plays
that.
Around close again, man. I'm going. Hell yeah!
It's funny that you mentioned that because that came up at a party I was at one night, and me and another dude there had this conversation. He was a big Primus fan, and you either are or you're not. I mean, because I could go talk to somebody else at the party.
I guess
they're
so.
Like, "What the fuck are they talking about?" I should have known one of you guys saw them.
Huh? We're zoning.
Mike was zoning. Stick and I are talking about Primus, and Mike just totally right. fucking tuned
do the whole
out.
Fucking show ourselves, Mike. Right?
You said.
Super group. What about Bananarama?
Bananarama.
Come to think of it, David Lee Roth's first solo band was a super group. Absolutely. Steve Vai, and what was the bass player's name?
Billy Sheehan.
Sheenage. Yep, right there.
The
making
winery
the super
dogs,
group.
Man.
Winery Dogs, another Billy Sheehan
groups?
Group. One of my favorite
really?
Groups, yeah.
Uh-huh. Learning all kinds of shit tonight.
That's Mike Portnoy is the drummer
is
from
the
Dream Theater.
Winery Dogs.
And, you know, Billy Sheehan actually is in Mr. Big, which would probably be another fucking one, because that was Paul, wasn't it Paul Gilbert that was the guitar player in Mr. Big? It was. He had like a successful metal career.
Gilbert,
I think it was Paul Gilbert. It was him and Billy Sheehan.
I wasn't into them.
They opened for Rush. That's how I knew about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, the David Lee Roth's first super, that was a super group. Mm-hmm. He came out, he was like, fuck you, Eddie, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, he did 1-2 punch.
Does anybody remember, this is stretching a little bit, but you might remember, I don't know what you were listening to in the 80s, but if you're talking metal super groups, and this was one album, it was called Project Driver.
No.
Tony McAlpine.
McAlpine?
And
wow.
I only
Rudy,
know that
Rudy
from you,
Sarzo
bro.
And Rob Rock.
Hey, man, you're reaching deep
wow.
into the fucking...
Yeah, that was fucking deep. McAlpine and who? And Sarzo and who was the other guy?
I don't remember who the singer
deep into
was,
the vault.
Man, but it was a really great album if that's what you listen to in 1986, man.
What about like Alcatraz or Yngwie? I mean, every record Yngwie put out was a super group because he had a different singer.
That's
different
the thing, man. Mike beat me too. He was first, but me and Mike had a boner for Yngwie, man. We were on Yngwie's God Camp.
Yeah, the guy,
for a little
man,
while
he,
there.
Graham,
and everything
Graham
that was
Bonnet
connected to him.
Him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yngwie
yeah,
was fucking...
Alcatraz, man.
Yeah.
We have that album.
I feel bad for Graham Bonnet, man. He has no it's like
I'll always stick up for Graham Bonnet.
Yeah.
Graham Bonnet, someone
Alcatraz
still loves you.
Alcatraz was put together.
I'm not putting you under fire, I'm putting you on a pedestal.
Graham Bonnet, that was like his solo project.
And then you get this fucking kid, you got
Yngwie.
Yeah.
He's funny.
So he Yngwie leaves and guess who replaces him? Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He couldn't get a break.
Springboard
you know,
for hot guitar players.
Having worked
like
with Richie Blackmore in Rainbow, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
Alcatraz,
Graham Bonnet.
That song "General Hospital" still sounds awesome.
He looks younger. He looks younger in his 60s than he did.
Graham
in his
Bonnet.
30s. He looked old when he was in his 30s.
Yeah, he looked old then.
You know? Yeah, he did.
I watched the.
It's just funny how like the old people in rock and roll back in the 80s are now the youngest. Like Ian Hill from Priest, he looked like super old in the 80s, and
yeah,
now
he
he's like the youngest looking one in the group.
Ah, right.
About Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
That'd be one, right? I did like Velvet Revolver. I always liked Scott Weiland. Like I said, I said it in the beginning of the show.
I didn't listen to the disc, dude, but they released a single or two that I really liked, man. And I'm trying to think of the singles. I like those songs.
I felt Slash, like, unleashed. You know, he was finally out from under fucking Axl Rose camp and the Guns N' Roses thing, and it just was like, wah! I was like, all right, this dude, got some fucking licks. I dug it. They put out two records, and then Weiland fucked it up again, you know?
Rockstar!
Yeah. You know, actually, when he died, man, his wife, or his ex-wife, I don't know if they were still married or not, but she wrote a piece in Rolling Stone, and it was the glorification of, like, drugs and rock and roll and stuff, and it was mind-blowing. It was so well-written.
Yeah.
And from the heart, and, you know, what drugs did to her family, what drugs did to her kids, and it was just crazy. It was wild, man. Really, really wild story.
No shit.
That dude was just so fucking out there. I don't know how he lived as long as he did.
Yeah.
It's like Keith Richards, the same thing. He's the guy still around.
Some of those guys ate it, man. Robin Crosby from Rat. That was a sad story, man. That guy just went
His
down.
His last interview actually came out recently for some reason, Mitch LaFon. He's a Canadian journalist / he does his own podcast, and he's been around for a while. He did Robin Crosby's last interview, and he did this in like 2002, I think, less than a year before he died. And he just sat on it. He just like had it stored away, and he just released it about a month ago.
Really?
It's out there, yeah.
Oh, I got to look at that.
Really?
Yeah, it's about 45 minutes long, but definitely worth a listen.
I always remember him from...
That's pretty big news if it's just released.
Yeah.
From that movie, what was it? Was it Penelope Spheeris that did that movie about the...
Decline of Western Civilization.
And they're interviewing Robin Crosby, and he's just fucking drinking vodka straight out of the bottle in that pool.
You're thinking about Chris Holmes, bro. He's another guy I wanted to bring up. That's Chris Holmes from Wasp.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
They looked alike.
He's in the same
Crosby,
that's
right. Crosby was in the same way, though.
Yeah. He was the one who was dating the penthouse pets. And
dude,
like,
you actually stole my
AIDS.
Fire. I was going to bring him
I'm
up next.
I'm sorry about that. I apologize.
That's cool, brother.
I really did confuse them, too. He died of AIDS, the other guy. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was Chris Holmes. Yeah. That's right. He's just drinking in the tube, in the fucking pool, just drinking vodka out of the bottle. That was rock and roll.
Total debauchery, man.
It was. Where is that anymore? Everybody's got
we just
played Madison Square Garden. Now I got to go tuck my drink kids our tea. And say goodnight and go home. I'll see you guys in the morning.
Man,
I love you all.
Rock and roll is a friendly face, man. You know, it's a...
Fuck off.
The Yvette brothers aren't swigging vodka in a pool on their inflatables.
The fucking... who's those other fucking chuckleheads? Fucking... I can't even think of their fucking name. Three Doors Down.
When Adam Levine and Dave Grohl represent the friendly face of rock and roll, man. No further comment.
Yeah.
And I like nothing against Dave Grohl.
It's like a friendly, smiling Walmart.
He smiles too
sticker.
Much.
Hi, welcome to Walmart. I'm Adam Levine.
Yeah. Welcome to Walmart. Can we offer you some rock and roll?
I know of Adam Levine. I've seen him. I could tell you it's him if I see him in a picture, but who is he? Like,
Adam
where does he come from? Like, is that Matchbox?
Maroon 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did right. Got the moves like Jagger, and that song is hot.
It was a good
now,
song.
Now, aren't they? I mean, again, maybe I'm being
telling you.
I'm kind of being a hypocrite here. Is that am I just like feeding the stereotype? Are they the same band? Matchbox 20, Maroon 5, Three Doors Down.
Different.
It kind of like you know that old joke like Foreigner, Kansas. Oh, same thing. REO Speedwagon, Styx.
I wouldn't
same
say
thing.
That. I think they're more.
It's on the same level as that. You
it
know?
Is. Yeah, I think they're.
They're different.
I think that Maroon 5.
Adam Levine's got
pop.
A distinctive voice.
Oh,
he really does.
He wrote
a couple of catchy ass tunes. He did.
You want to see some cool YouTube footage of that dude? Watch him at Howard Stern's birthday party doing Purple Rain. It was fucking great. He's a good guitar player.
And then he does corny shit like game shows and sells acne lotion. You know,
he's like the fucking new Gene Simmons, really, is what he is.
Yeah, except he doesn't flaunt it like that.
Adam Levine.
Okay.
Gene, you got some competition, pal.
Yeah, he's like one of the hosts
time.
On The Voice
like
or something.
I overhear him on the TV and just kind of who is this guy? This is a rock star?
He's banging a supermodel.
He sings that song.
He's kind of like almost what I kind of saw Dave Navarro trying to become 10 years ago, when he kind of got into the whole...
Dave Navarro was on the tattoo shows.
Yeah, what was he? What was his? Wasn't he on one of those fucking
shows? He was on reality shows, man. Yeah. He was doing that. He was doing
Ink Masters.
That happened and went too, where people were just desperate to put themselves on a reality show in any way they is that past?
He's a fan.
Any way they can, you know. Yeah, they all are. Bret Michaels, man. Everybody, who didn't? Who didn't? Everybody was trying it.
I think music that just kind of fell away, even while rock was still vital in the '90s, man. When that whole hair metal thing kind of went away, and that whole thing about, well, Kurt Cobain and Nirvana killed hair metal, and grunge killed hair metal, and then you see Lita Ford. I love that footage of Lita Ford sitting on the beach. Bring me back my rock and roll. She was like all bitter of grunge, and you know. But anyway, a lot of those bands, kind of you saw like Vince Neil's and Bret Michaels doing the reality shows. It almost seemed like it was part of that hair metal thing, where
like
everybody's kind of like trying to like come back and just get any sort of attention.
That's how nostalgia works, man. It's cool again. You know,
I don't know.
There's a scene for it now. They're playing smaller venues, or they're grouping them together.
Their career is probably better now than it was like in 95, you know?
We're the ones with the money. We're adults now.
It's 20 years, man.
You know, we can afford that ticket to go see them, you know?
It takes 20 years for something historically to come full circle. So it's big. 10 years later, it's totally unpopular and
it's
made fun of. And then 10 years after that, it comes full circle. It's popular again.
Mike, that's precisely why we became hippie-ish guys, man, in 88, 89, man, because the hippie thing exploded again in like the late 80s with the Grateful Dead resurgence, man. It came back in a big way, and we kind of rode that wave.
The 70s came back in the 90s. The 80s came back in, you know, it's kind of every 20 years. I remember 50s in the 80s, the Bee Gees were like, hey, you like the Bee Gees. Like, nobody got quite dead saying they like the Bee Gees, right? In 1998,
the Bee Gees were the Antichrist,
man,
in the 70s.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And now we listen to Saturday Night Fever. And in the 70s, like you say, bro, in the 70s, it was all about the 50s, man. Hence, Happy Days and Grease, you know.
The 70s was a gigantic 50s revival.
Yeah.
You had Happy Days. You had Grease.
I just said that.
Yeah. I'm losing my mind, man.
I didn't take credit for my information. You guys heard it. I said it.
What, are you a ventriloquist?
I said that.
Graffiti.
It's my information.
That was Stick. That was not Mike. I'd like to strike that from the record, please.
You said Happy Days, Grease. No, but you're right. Happy Days, Grease, American Graffiti. Yeah,
go ahead, you backpedaling son of a bitch.
Right. He's got two more. Right. He saved the skin.
I contributed to your conversation, man.
You jacked his conversation is what you fucking did.
I took it and I ran with it, man, and now it's mine.
Hey, it's the ball right out of my hands.
Mine. I'm taking
on,
it.
Wordsmith.
You can't have it back.
You're a wordsmith. Have you ever plagiarism?
Two more. He said Grease and Happy Days, and I said American Graffiti and Sha Na Na.
That was a strip interception. Stuck it right out of my hand and ran the other way with it. That was a big play.
Oh,
what else was there in a 50s revival in the 1970s?
Who cares?
We get five. That's enough.
Do you know that the term doo-wop was never used until 1971?
No.
Doo-wop music was not known as doo-wop music back when it was popular.
Should
I just throw that in there?
Really? That's amazing. Yeah. I find that amazing.
Yeah.
Who said it?
Some DJ coined that term. Like
in 71?
Your early 1970s.
Really?
71, man. It wasn't Cousin Brucey, no.
I'm actually stunned.
Cousin Brucey got a career off of it, though,
yeah,
man.
He did
very well. Off of that term.
I worked at this fucking place in Carteret. I was doing 3 to 11 shifts, and they had that fucking 101.5 on all the time, or 101.1 or whatever it was, and I had to hear Cousin Brucey every fucking night. I wanted to jump off the fucking boxes. We were stacking boxes with like forklifts. I wanted to
sort of Mike,
dive
he grew up
off
that way.
Split my fucking head open. I couldn't stand that guy. And then, you know, then as I get older, you started listening to Howard, and Howard just ripped that guy to shreds, and I was like, yes! I fucking love Howard Stern.
Cousin Brucey have that annoying echo on his voice.
Yeah.
I never
my fucking God. Hey, Cousin Brucey. 101.1. That's the Temptations for you.
I sent him a request for an interview for my Four Seasons book, and he
God.
Never replied.
Why?
Because. You don't necessarily have to like the people you talk to. Just as long as they do you some good.
I guess.
Your parents were all about.
I'm on record as saying fuck Cousin Brucey.
CBS FM, right?
So my mother used to listen to CBS when they were when they were a legitimate oldie station.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cousin Brucey was, what was it, Saturday nights? Saturday nights he would come on.
I have no idea.
You guys listened to it, not me?
It was Harry Harrison.
I was
and
fucking forced to listen to it. Like
Ron
I said, I
Lundy.
Wanted to dive head first.
They, yeah,
off
they
a
all had that echo on their
voice.
You know what? You could have done worse.
They all sounded like this. They sounded just like this.
But you had echo.
Mike's messing with the levels.
Cousin Brucey here.
It's taking a risk.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you
but
know, another question that was posed to me with this topic of supergroups. Somebody wanted to know what if we had, you know, and it's an interesting question. If it was up to us individually, who would be part of your supergroup? So you know, I mean, and people, some people out there said, oh, especially I know Vic on our Facebook page, especially this one, and that one.
Right here.
He named two, actually.
Are there more supergroups we didn't mention?
Should we say
no. Before we say ours,
let's
give these are guys that he would want to come up with.
Let's give Vic a shout out because he is very, he participates in a lot of our.
Very vocal.
Yeah, he's very vocal. Vic gave us two.
Oh, Vic has one of my guys. I see it written.
Yeah, Vic said stealing. Prince, Randy Rhodes, Keith Moon, Cliff Burton, Ian Gillan.
Wait.
Ian Gillan singing.
Now he didn't.
Well, who's
specify
singing? Prince,
because you got two singers there, so maybe he wants.
All right, they'll
Prince
split up.
Guitar.
Yeah,
Prince would be a freaking pretty goddamn good
what
backup
does he
vocalist.
Have here? What is the one on?
John Bonham,
Hendrix,
Stevie
Ray Vaughan,
Stevie
Scott
Ray Vaughan.
Weiland.
That's
pretty that's good. One.
Interesting.
That's a really good one.
All right. Well, since Vic stole my fire, I'm going first, man.
Right,
I have my dream band all planned out.
They're playing Madison Square Garden, March 17th.
The ultimate supergroup, right? Consisting significantly of black guys. So I'm calling it the band Black Power Mixtape. After the cool documentary that I've had saved on Netflix for a year, but I haven't watched. Black Power Mixtape, all right, Prince is in it. Okay, Prince is going to play the guitar. He will sing too. Little Richard will also sing and play the piano. And they will trade off.
Little Richard, belong in a
Little Richard wants to go back and do some coke. Prince will fucking take over, you know. Bass will be Bootsy Collins.
Whoa.
Right? From James Brown fame.
Funkadelic,
right?
Too.
Yep. And for my drummers, now I'm going to have two drummers. Just like the Grateful Dead. Right? This band's going to have two drummers.
And the older brothers.
Right? And they're white guys. Charlie Watts and Phil Collins.
Whoa.
From Genesis, Phil Collins will sing too. Two white guys on drums, right? And they're gonna round things out. All right, so Black Power Mixtape album's gonna be called Flounder Cod and Soul, Soul. And album cover is gonna be a macro shot, right? Real close of a cassette tape, right? Black Power Mixtape. The cassette tape's gonna be all strewn out. And like with a pencil in it, and you'll see the pencil like the person
nice.
Was trying to twist it back, but it's on the back too. And if you flip the back over, you'll see that there's a coffee that's spilled into it. You spilled coffee, and the coffee is running into the tape on the back. And there'll be pictures of the band on the inside. Right?
I love
Black
you.
Power mixtape.
I fucking love you. That was just so... The visual to that, I'm sitting right next to this man, and the fucking picture he just painted for me is just fucking... If I could get a hard-on right now, I would.
And Phil Collins and Charlie Watts are black guys stuck in white guys' bodies anyway, so...
Phil is.
So
I don't know about Charlie.
I just wanted two white guys. Play drums.
I didn't write mine down, so go ahead, Mike.
I have
how the fuck do you follow that? I'm no
yeah,
dummy. I'm passing
man.
It right off to
think,
you,
I
son.
I gotta think of an album cover now, man.
I didn't think of an album name, a song title, nothing, a band
didn't
name.
Didn't take it that far.
My album cover is just gonna have like subtitles on the bottom. It's just gonna be a screen with subtitles on it, and the band is called The Incoherence. And on drums, you got Keith Moon. On bass, you have Lemmy. On guitar, you have Keith Richards.
Yeah. Wow.
The other guitar, you have Slash. And on vocals, it's going to be almost like a Simon and Garfunkel duo of Ozzy Osbourne and Iggy Pop.
Whoa.
That's fascinating.
The Incoherence, man.
Yeah. That's the album cover's going to be Basic Black with a little bit of type on the bottom.
You need
Dude.
Subtitles to read what they're saying. Slash is probably the most normal one out of all
of them.
I don't
think that band can keep it together for more than two gigs. But yeah.
But I like the dynamic of... I would love to see Keith and Slash together. You know, I don't like Guns N' Roses, never did, probably never will. But Slash always kept his integrity, man. He was always cool. And... you know, I was always kind of like, you know, it's just like little pairings that you kind of like would like to see one day, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the pairing of Keith and Slash would be kind of cool to see.
And nice. Lemmy somehow, I bet you he can work. Just going, doing whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Would that work?
Yeah. Tie it all in, bring it in nice.
You know, and I said, well, Ozzy, you know, because Ozzy, you can never understand a word. He just like imagine Keith and Ozzy together. It's just something that's like so ridiculous and far-fetched, but it makes sense. And Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I couldn't decide between the two of them. So like, how would that work? Well, it would be hysterical if you had like an Everly Brothers, Simon and Garfunkel type.
You know what, bro? It would be whichever one was standing that night. You would either see Iggy Pop or Ozzy. You wouldn't see both
was,
on one night.
Not face down on the stage, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So gun to my head now, man. I didn't think of a band name or album cover.
I do have a second one, but I'll leave it in the back.
But I guess my band name could be Easy Peasy, We Are Sleazy. I don't know. Yeah. Just for lack of not thinking of one. My singer is going to be David Lee Roth. It's no secret. That guy's like one of my favorite front men. The guy is so charismatic. Love David Lee Roth.
I like him already.
You know, it's a shame where that guy went, but I love him. Two guitar players are going to be Randy Rhoads, Jimi Hendrix. There's just no doubt about it. I'd love to see those two playing together. Bass player is going to be Rick Danko from the band. That fucking guy just... did it all. He did fucking everything. He could play fiddle on that record if he wanted to. Loved the band. Loved Rick Danko. Every time that guy sang, you knew he was singing. It just was full of emotion. His bass runs. I mean, if you get the chance to watch The Last Waltz, just watch that guy in the pocket. Watch that dude groove. He's one of my favorite bass players.
You're in a Danko zone. You were talking about Danko before the show tonight.
I totally am right now. I'm really digging on his stuff. Drummers were very, very tough. I have one that just immediately jumps to my mind because the guy is just a speed drummer, and he just it kicks you in the fucking nuts. But a friend of mine mentioned another drummer who I it's a toss up. So I'm gonna really
we might be thinking of the same.
I'm flipping a coin right now, and it's boom. It's Chad from Chili. I don't even know his last name, but Chad from the Chili Peppers would be the guy. And you know, my friend Steve was always talking to me. He saw that guy at a clinic, and he was talking about Pocket and just like went into this thing and playing, and he was like, whoa. And he's a drummer, Steve, my friend Steve. And he's just blown away by this guy, you know, how he's talking, and just fucking fell right into this pocket. Wow. He's like, wow, it was just impressive. My other guy would have been Dave Lombardo from Slayer, believe it or not.
Yeah.
That was my speed guy. That guy is just fucking assault, all out, balls to your face.
What about Carmine Appice?
He's an interesting combination, man, with paired up with David Lee Roth, man.
Yeah,
I can imagine what that would sound like.
With fucking Hendrix and fucking and Randy, you can't go wrong. Yeah. Both of those guys are gonna fucking lead like, you know, like it's no tomorrow.
Yeah, I gotta see. I gotta hear that. I gotta see that.
One of the questions that we were talking outside, like, what is a supergroup? Growing up, when I always thought supergroup because it was with Cream and
Blind Faith
in the early Blind Faith. In the early 80s, there was this band called Asia.
Oh, yeah, right? And absolutely.
Was
I can't believe we didn't bring them up yet.
There was this band called GTR. So I always thought of like bands that of like virtuoso, like really talented people that are like really talented musicians,
talented,
man. Like,
yeah.
Remember like Steve Howe. So when I put mine together, I was just like thinking of just like characters I would love to see to get together. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I almost wanted to get Tom Waits into this. But where do I put him? On keyboards, maybe.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll throw him in my group.
I wanted to put together like musicians that I thought were really good at
that
what they do.
That would be cool together,
man.
Right? Yeah.
And so I kind of assembled Neil Peart. Peart.
We
went our whole life
we're
saying
American.
Peart.
It's Neil Peart.
Okay.
Was there some asshole saying Peart?
There's a few assholes.
Oh, my God. What an asshole.
You say Neil Peart, you're an asshole.
You down with
Neil
Peart?
I've got my whole fucking life saying Neil Peart. It's Neil Peart. I don't care
like
what
the
correct pronunciation
is. I'll do you one better. Neil from Rush.
Neil from Rush.
And don't talk to him because he doesn't want to talk to you.
Your boy, man, Richie Kotzen. From and Brian. And Brian. Brian. Brian Sheehan. Billy Sheehan. On bass.
Yeah.
And the other guitarist would be Tom Morello.
Tom Morello and Richie Kotzen together?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it happened, man. No, it didn't happen. Did it happen?
Richie Kotzen and Tom Morello. Wow, that would be fucking sick. You ever watch him play Richie Kotzen?
I think it happened at the... they did a tribute to Tony McAlpine about a year ago.
Wow.
Tony McAlpine came up in two separate contexts.
Yeah. Believe in that, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was going to do you one better with Richie Kotzen. You guys said something... Somebody said something about Poison before. He was in Poison briefly.
Yeah.
And got kicked out because he banged the drummer's wife. The guy's a real fucking scoundrel. He's a rock and roll star, man. Yeah. He really is.
Yeah.
That's there are three.
They kicked him out
too.
For that, huh?
Yeah, well.
they're not above it, those dogs.
See, back then, they just write a song about it.
Yeah.
You know, the KKK took my baby. You know, the Ramones got through that, man.
He wrote the biggest hit on that record, too. I think he was on there for maybe one or two records, but he wrote, like, one of the biggest hits on it.
Let me say something about Asia, man. You were mentioning guys that looked old back then before.
Yeah,
I couldn't get Asia out of my mouth, but I watched the video today.
Heat of the moment?
Yeah, they were fucking wrinkly as fuck back then, like 82, man. Yeah,
and they were in their 30s, man. That's a scary thing. Yeah.
Bad diets,
that
man.
That fucking dude now looks like a fucking mad scientist. He's like balding on the top and the real long hair. And he's got his still round glasses.
Hold on a second.
John Wetton just died, man.
Yeah, he did just a couple of weeks ago, yes. Yeah.
Dropping bombs on those motherfuckers. He just died?
Yeah.
Yeah. A little progressive rock there for Asia. I can't believe none of us mentioned it until the end of the show.
GTR came out a couple of years after. I think it was like Steve Hackett and Steve Howe. Emerson, Lake and Palmer in the 80s became Emerson, Lake and Powell.
Never listened to them at all. I never liked DLP.
Somebody tried to turn me on to that, and I was like, nah, that's a little too progressive for me.
It's too stressful. I get stressed out when I hear that.
I like some prog rock, but just them.
That was a little too much. So there you have Aaron. That's our
actually, no, not yet.
You have another group?
No, but there's one big super group you forgot, and we can't. Close shop before we talk about the Rock and Roll Circus Band, man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
John and fucking
That's John
Nick
Lennon.
And, wow. That's fucking your killer.
Eric Clapton Keith on Richard guitar, blues, Keith on bass, Mitch Mitchell on drums.
And Yono howling like a fucking dog
John
in heat
and Yoko,
in the background.
Man, you know?
I was just thinking, man, we haven't mentioned Bruce Springsteen the entire show, man. And the super group that I would have loved to have seen was the one in 2014 that was supposed to happen. Of Bruce on vocals, Tom Morello on guitar, Ace Frehley on guitar, Chris Novoselic on bass, and Dave Grohl on drums. Okay, it was supposed to happen at the end of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony.
Right.
They were supposed to do Highway to Hell, and it never happened.
That's right.
And
that's Bruce's fault,
it
actually.
It is Bruce's fault.
Yeah.
Was that the year the E Street Band got inducted?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he went on and on and
it's
on
all his
and
fault.
On. Yeah.
Yep.
I was so bummed when we did not get in that night, and as soon as I looked back and saw it and realized what actually happened, I'm like, shit, I'm glad we didn't go.
Yeah.
You know, to see Kiss in suits, taking shots at people, you know, and not playing.
That's
fucking listen to Springsteen's people yammer on all night.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm glad we didn't go.
But would that have been a super group? That was just like a jam session because they have that every year.
Yeah, but just seeing it happen.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Just seeing it happen.
Without
like the Rock and Roll Circus, that was a one-time thing.
One shot.
But you know what?
That was a great.
And say
that was a stick. That was fucking awesome that you brought that up, dude. You know I'm no Stones fan, but that's still like unique to see.
I just had to toss that out there for the Bruce haters.
That was a lot of interesting facts about that. Brian Jones's last appearance with the Rolling Stones. I just found out. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
What that
yeah.
was?
Yeah,
I didn't know
no
that.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of mystery involving that dude's death.
And Ian Anderson, who was playing in Jethro Tull, his comment that he was so fucked up he couldn't even tune his guitar. Actually, he said that to a reporter who said it back to Mick, and Mick got real pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And he said he offered a real groveling apology.
Well,
I'm not a Tull guy, but Tull was pretty amazing that night, man. They played a cool tune. And that's when he supposedly began a lot of firsts, man. That was when he first started with his pose, with his leg up. You know, you see the silhouette of him with his leg.
Yeah. Wow.
Was it Clapton in that?
Clapton was in that.
But was it him that was looking at fucking John because Yoko's behind him fucking
looking
at Alan, and he's just like, fucking shut this bitch up, man.
Yeah.
Why is she everywhere with you? And he just felt horrible for John Lennon. Hey, the guy, I guess, loved her. Whatever.
Yeah, no, John wasn't thinking that. He was thinking, man, how great she is, man. Yoko, great.
Dude, imagine the time, though, man. That was December 68. The White Album had just come out. Beggar's Banquet had just come out. Electric Ladyland was brand new. You know, the music that
just
was coming out.
Not only the music, just the talent in that fucking room alone. And you'll see this in Clapton's autobiography, and I will get it for you, I swear now, and it's on tape. What blew me away the most about it was that little area of London or Britain or England, wherever they were, had this fucking massive amount of the Zeppelin, the fucking Jimmy Pages, the Jimi Hendrixes were there, the Who, the Beatles. It was all this fucking talent in that one area, and there's nothing that ever could even come close to that, I don't think.
Yeah,
came out in New York City. I'm sure there's
concerts.
Yeah, and checking each other out.
All you need is love. The video, you know, you see, is Mick in that? You see Mick in the crowd
sitting at the,
you see at the end
feet.
Of the Hyde Park concert. You see Paul McCartney sitting on the lawn in the audience. You know, it's holy crap.
If there's bands and places anywhere now doing anything like that, let us know.
Well, there's a band in Brooklyn.
There is. My friend's band, Attacker, is going to be playing in Brooklyn, St. Vitus.
Oh, they have to be awesome with a name like that.
Attacker.
Yeah.
When are we going to have band. When is John coming on the show, man?
I got to get in touch with him. He's kind of busy. Yeah. You know what I thought about today, though, was trying to get Ronnie on first. Ronnie's not playing right now, and it might be an easier time to get Ronnie on.
We have a surprise, I think, for our. Hopefully, it's going to be our next episode.
Yeah, that would be cool. Hopefully, that surprise works out.
If we could put that together, because it's somebody that's been kind of played a big role in the development of this our whole show, man.
Sure.
Just the ongoing
big supporter.
Yeah,
I always picture somebody playing a big piece of bread.
Bread fan.
But anyway. I'm going to do a plug for somebody. This is off topic. Totally got nothing to do with music.
Jesus Christ.
But,
fucking whore.
Yeah, I'm a whore. What can I say, man?
This better be good.
If you have kids.
Better not be for like fucking Raisinets or something. Let's go down to the...
Actually, if Raisinets wants to pay us, I'll be like, things are delicious.
They're so great, and they're chocolatey fucking raisins.
I'll rub them on my balls.
I'll shoot them out of my nose across the room at you.
But if you have kids, all right, I say between the ages of 4 and 10.
It's not an Amber Alert, is it?
Yeah. A new children's
book. Send them
book,
to us. We're going to
A children's
them.
Book. It's called It's Not So Bad. Author is Allison Pilla. Allison is somebody that I had the privilege of working with briefly. She works with special needs kids, and it's a really awesome children's book. It's done... it's out on Page Publishing. You can get it on Amazon. Really good stuff if you love children's books. Like, again, I bought it for my nephew, but he's like 3 and he doesn't know. He still isn't. He's in that age of, you know, just destroying everything he touches, and he kind of thinks it's a coloring book. But I'm going to hold on to it for like another year. He'll appreciate it. But it's called It's Not So Bad. On Amazon. Pick it up on Amazon. Maybe I'll probably post the link in the show notes. But anyway, like us on Facebook once again. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We're also on SoundCloud and Stitcher. I'm going to know this by heart one of these days.
Raisinets.
Yeah, Raisinets.
Have fun in New Orleans, Pat.
Yeah.
Come back with stories. What's going
on? I'll have nude
next
pictures, booby pictures.
Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me, bad news.